Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Whenever you listen to this podcast, I greatly appreciate it. Thank you for showing your support to Let Me Say This. My name is Antonio Laborte, and I have another episode for you for Let Me Say This. This episode comes to you and presented to you and sponsored by Anchor. If you haven't already heard in the show, if you haven't listened to it, you know that I'm interjecting these little ads for Anchor. So if you hear them, notice that and know that those are sponsored ads to keep this thing running and to also get a little bit moolah on the side, a little coin to my name for doing these podcasts, which is always a nice little plus. But without further ado, thank you again for choosing to listen to me speak, to Let Me Say This, and I hope you enjoy the show. Democratic National Convention. The speakers for the Democratic Party are like an all-star lineup. The Pro Bowl leaders of politics. I don't know about anybody else, but the level of appreciation I have for the people who showcase an ability to have a complete, rational, eloquent thought and who can convey this message out in a professional manner is something I never would have imagined we'd seen again. The other night, we saw Joe Biden officially become the Democratic nominee to take his shot as the 46th president of the United States. And I want to take the time to preface this. I want to take the time to preface this by saying that Dr. Jill Biden, I said Dr. Jill Biden, is carrying her weight and some in the last 80 days. She's a great co-partner for the image that Joe Biden needs to surround himself with. And she's a part of the group that is the right people for his corner and to be in his corner. The energy of the Democratic National Convention is captured by what most would probably call like radical leaders, radical ideas. And speaking of somebody who was labeled as radical, Bernie had a fantastic speech, which gave Biden a layup for policy targeting. See, what Bernie did in his speech was essentially give him like a five-point plan that he said that he would deliver to him and help him create and establish if Biden would want Bernie to be a part of that whole regime, that whole system. Bernie called on those who are ready for unprecedented acts of change to stand for democracy and fight against its threats. AOC, ladies and gentlemen, don't play with her. Don't play with her. The backlash, the derogatory statements, the disrespect that the president and other politicians and just people in general dish out at her is remarkable, and not remarkable in a good way. The fact that they only give this woman 60 seconds to deliver any type of important stance is just ridiculous. Like, I feel like she needs to be one of the prominent speakers, as eventually she will be the name and face that gets thrown around in Democratic politics for decades to come. Decades. Like, she tore that shit up anyway. Like, but again, the disrespect that she gets is just a sign of validation for the work that she's been able to do. And what Republicans are afraid of, a strong ethnic woman, but strong woman in general, but obviously AOC is a person of color, who isn't afraid to stand up against the establishment. Somebody who's willing to call it out for what it is, somebody who's able to stand against the current wave of trying to suppress down these quote unquote radical ideas. She's got her shit on lock. You see, women like her who organize through community projects, speak with the people in the neighborhoods face to face, commit themselves to untraditional political pathways, represent the actual average American. Women like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Cori Bush, Rashida Tlaib, Ayanna Pressley, Alessandra Biaggi, Ilhan Omar, who are taking the political landscape by storm. Political landscape by storm. Women who conjugate in the streets. Women who are taking over positions that often excluded them. Kicking down the gatekeepers. Kicking down the door. Making space for their voice to be heard. They're saying, hey, you're not going to silence my voice anymore. You're going to hear what I have to say. That's American value being expressed to the highest degree. Leaders of national healthcare reform. Advocates of the often discredited women's rights. people of color who have direct experience with organizing and creating movements that contribute to greater public awareness of social issues and have a hand in the policies that enforce anti-racism, anti-sexist ideas, and leading to prohibiting racist, sexist, xenophobic practices. See, they're squeezing out the remnants of old thinking and old accepted behavior. And they're forcing people to think differently and adapt into an all-inclusive America. A tried and true America that respects other people's way of life. For the women that I mentioned, for the people that I didn't mention, for the people who aren't necessarily politicians, but they're in the streets doing what they can, fighting for the good fight. Shout out to y'all for doing what you do. Shout out to y'all. And by the way, do y'all miss the Obama's dialect? I mean, the way that they articulate about public affairs, you know, the way they articulate about like policies, a sense of hope, a breakdown of complicated subjects that are done with style and grace. Like, I miss that. Like, when I heard Michelle Obama speak, I miss having leaders who were able to speak to the country in a manner that someone of that stature should be able to. Not using sexist language or playing on sexist ideologies. Not relating the same mannerisms over and over and over and over again. Not speaking with empty phrases that have little importance or truth to them. Yeah, I miss that. I miss that. I wanted to get into another thing. I wanted to get into what I referred to as the fork in the road that Biden must choose between. He's got to go down a road of purely raw anti-racist evolution. That road comes with restructuring the idea of law and order by going further than defunding the police and dismantling this force and raising a new, more efficient source of community protection, which I would bet the house that I don't own that he will not do. Like, I would put everything for the idea that he won't go that route. But that's the intended route. That's the very tried and true way that he should go. That's one. He must direct the source of immigration into two fronts: dismantling organizations that limit human rights. You guessed it, we gotta melt this ice. There's a little corny play on the camp, internment camp, ICE. And symbolic immigration tactics that encourage distrust and fear in foreign groups. That's a no-no. We can't have that. We're not going to label non-Americans as overall dangerous, as the majority of them dangerous. That is a racist idea. We're not going to do that. We can't do that. Not suggesting the creation of barriers that have little effective policy change and become rally cries and buzzwords for empty promises of security. They incite people to invoke a level of fear and then implement that fear to try to control others. Lastly, Joe Biden, if elected president, he must destroy the three-headed monster of the future: health policy, education reform, specifically college debt, but a whole reexamination of the school system, and environmental disturbances, environmental problems, environmental issues, environmental setbacks, new ways of green, clean energy. If he wants history to look at him as other than a figurehead for the future of democracy and actually being a helping hand, he's going to have to satisfy some of those things I just mentioned. He's going to have to stick his hand in the pot in some of those things. He's going to have to. And what Kamala Harris can do is to be the necessary push that gets him, that gets both of them into at least two of these things. Minimum two of these things. Preferably health and security. Health being the COVID pandemic.
and then future health projects, policies, and then security. You're gonna have to look at police brutality. You're gonna have to look at what the police force stands for. Law enforcement, taking another examination at what it is that we can do with them, what we shouldn't do with them, if we should get rid of them, if we shouldn't. You're gonna have to examine that. And then transitioning into like immigration, environmental scares, sectors, you know, things like that. But to go back to the DNC, okay, to sum up the Democratic National Convention, it was obvious the stance that, you know, that it was obvious the stance and the forefront in which they were willing to die on. And that was, hey, we're not Trump or anything like him. That was the main focus. Second, the next one was, we'll take health and safety precautions seriously. That was their second. It was we're not Trump. Okay, check. Next is, we aren't going to fumble the bag with a pandemic. We are not like that. That's box two, check. Next was examining the faults of the sitting president, which is like a subsect of like the first one. But more importantly, how they're willing to rewrite the wrongs of his presidency. That was like the main things that they're going off of. We are not Trump. We will handle this better. And look at what he's done wrong. This is what we'll do to fix that. Okay. Then they had like a few key speakers talk highly of both Biden and Kamala. Their outlook on future projects and like prominent speakers who encompass like radical change and highly progressive tactics. AOC, Bernie, people of that nature. See, they're living and dying on two ideas. We're not them, them being Trump and his administration. And we're identifying with the non-white Americans and the white non-Trumpians. They're going to identify with the non-white Americans. Like, hey, if you're anybody who's not white, come to our side because we'll make it feel inclusive. And then the white non-Trumpians. They're like, yeah, if you're tired of him, we got your solution over here. Would this be successful? When I heard it would be Biden taking lead for the Democratic nomination, I was like, I mentioned to some of my friends and family, like how it would be unbelievably close. The votes would split nearly 50-50. You see, let's use Bernie for example. If Bernie Sanders was the Democratic elect, him and Trump are two completely opposite people. The way that the voting would go would be either completely all one-sided because they represent the exact opposite of what they are, where Trump is very much leaning and carrying himself towards alt-right. Biden is still holding on to a moderately progressive view, but can still satisfy some more strongly liberal positions. So, you know, he's a more conservative vote for Democrats, for people who are fed up with Trump and the Republican Party. He's a more secure vote in that sense, you know. The votes are going to split nearly 50-50. They're too close of a call for each one. That's how I feel. I feel like, this election is going to be close. We'll see what happens. Trump family is here to fulfill their duty as daddy's little spokesman. You see, Donald Jr. made a strong statement about the value his father continues to show and maintain throughout all these troubled times, doubling down on law and order, protecting American families from violent acts of rioters and looters, re-energizing the right for free speech and religious practices, claiming that the Democrats are attempting to suppress these institutions and practices, claiming that the Trump administration is all for inclusiveness, immigrants, women, people of color, how they want to pursue a greater America for all and all of these people included. See, where Donald Trump Jr. went wrong, where every speaker on his behalf went wrong, is placing their credibility on the back of a renowned con man. They put their word on somebody who can't have his own word for himself, who can't maintain and uphold his own word, his own promises. The vision, although reached on bad faith and relied on through an unreliable man, It's a decent one. Like, security, inclusion, and the safety of America, that sounds great. But is that the behavior that's been displayed by that administration? No. Has that party upheld its job as adhering to democracy over the candidate in question? No. And speaker after speaker after speaker, we've seen a collection of political and sports figures vouch for him. We've seen him parade the idea of being inclusive and caring to American civilians by hosting staged swear-ins of citizenship, which is illegal and undermines the DOJ and Homeland Security on their policies regarding their stance on, like, prohibiting political activity during a naturalization. Like, you're not supposed to have that. You're not supposed to mingle and get intertwined with that. You let the people who are designated to do their job do their job. But yet we see Trump roll out ethnic groups as a means of securing public appeal. The same sort of questionable activity that Biden and the Democrats need to steer away from. Public appeal for the sake of perception rather than purpose. You gotta be careful now. People aren't stupid. They may overlook it because of this very unique circumstance, but not for long. And better be careful now. Biden's statements that referred to the idea of being the obvious choice for black people is a slippery slope. And it falls nearly in line with the puppeteering that the Trump administration is doing by bringing various groups of races and just being like, hey, look at all these people we got here. Everybody, look, see, I'm not racist. Look, there's a black person right there next to me. Oh, look, 20 feet away, there's a Muslim woman. Oh, look, another 15 feet away, we got somebody who's homosexual. And bringing in public works officials as a way to seem a part of the American collective conscience? Nah, that ain't it. One of the surprising gestures of the first night came from Herschel Walker, Hall of Fame NFL player Herschel Walker, who spoke on the character of Trump, claiming that calling him a racist is a slap in the face to him, Herschel, that his relationship with Trump has been nothing but respectful and how they're close with each other's families and have a long-standing friendship. Let me derail this to speak about something that I've been exploring and going deeper on. Trump is more narcissistic than he is racist. If you're providing for him or in some way satisfying his bank account or public appeal, that's your guy. Whatever and whoever gets him closer to his own personal desire, that's who's going to co-sign. And this may go through several changes at any given point. So that's why he may double-cross his own words. He may go back on his own words, quick to dismiss things that make him look bad and accept things that make him look good, even if he's on record saying the exact opposite of whatever he's suddenly adopting now. He has no true stance, but defers to the model that is most reliable to him and his stature. If environmental change, Black Lives Matter, and immigrants brought the most dollars and the most ratings to him, that's exactly what he would do. That's exactly what he'd be interested in. If the people in his ear were people who gave a shit about the lives of those outside the little circle of influence, he would perhaps be speaking more honestly and respectfully toward other groups of Americans. Because really, if you leave it up to him, he'll continue a charade of empty promises. See, a liar's best truth is the one you never know about. His words come out with pop, but shoot out dust. He doesn't have haters. He has observers, people who understand what he is because they've seen his actions and people they know personally. They know what deceit looks like, and they have a backbone to address it. See, Herschel Walker isn't the enemy. He has the all-too-common view of, well, they never treated me badly, so I have no issue with them. And we're not talking about dropping someone as a friend because they have like a habit of not answering the phone. No, we're talking about someone who exercises white supremacy motives, encourages sexist ideas and practices, glorifies it, and simply can't be accountable for anything he does if it turns out to be a bad look, while also stealing credit if it becomes a good look for him. Lou Holtz saying his life comes down to three words: trust, commitment, and love. And he asked himself, hey, can I trust Trump? And the answer was yes. And you know why it was yes? Because he wants unborn lives to live. That was the marker for truth. That was all the evidence we needed here. And the verdict to him being trustworthy was that him caring about the incomplete biological being, that's what made you trust him?
Michael McHale suggested that Biden and Harris are letting the far left anti-police push them into a complete underfunding and overhaul the police. Well, they're actually moving toward a plan to funneling a 9-figure investment toward increasing police training and reform work. But sure, let's just go with them being anti-police, when most progressive advocates are actually looking to go further than those two are when it comes to revamping this entire justice system. See, what the RNC does is that they do a good job of being a show worth watching. If they sold tickets, they could sell them out faster than you could even imagine. It's a must-see show. And they pull and tug at the hearts of Americans to go out and be motivated to do something. Whether that's in favor of them or against them, they get you to pay attention. That's the kicker. That's the key thing that they have. The DNC is like the appropriate polite speaker who, you know, is doing what's expected to be said, but doesn't really pull as much oohs and ahs, generally speaking. See, they have leaders and insight, but resort to similar cover face caveats that can get them in trouble when it comes down to like the nitty gritty of policy making and cash in on what you promised to take to the bank before. You know, like their ability to essentially have a methodology in how they're going to approach this presidency. Again, they're banking on the idea that we are not Trump. We will not behave like him. So that's the bottom line for them. You know, that's pretty much their caveat. That's the sword they're willing to die on. Friendly with the word reform. Scatter his reform branches with phrases that satisfy moderate recorrection, if you will, and complete removal of ineffective policy. A difficult but capable task. He needs to reinforce Trump's undermining to justice, tearing down the Postal Service, mishandling of COVID, surrounding people with a troubled scenario to get out of, the surmounting job loss with no plan in place. He needs to lean on the power of Kamala Harris and defer to her stances often to get a sense of how to approach debates and stand off against Trump. And lastly, he needs to cycle his social work, healthcare focus, and stick to the script. Because let's be honest, everyone is solidified with their choice. Arbitrarily, like 90% of the people would be cool with voting right now, because they know exactly which direction they're going to go in. Essentially, Biden's going to have to royally fuck things up for people who are not Trump, who are not voting for Trump to go for him. Okay, that's pretty much why Biden shouldn't win. Let's talk about our man Trump. Trump should be elected because of his ability to generate political appeal and draw attention to major and minor issues in America. We're in a heightened state of political interest. Conversations are being made about what should change, what should stay the same, what should be abolished, what should be elevated. Conversations about social reform, health practices, education reform, employment reconsideration, international affairs, data tracking, immigration policy, environmental agencies, all of these different things. With him as president, you can't help but keep tabs on everything that's going on. Where with other presidents, you may have been able to sleep for 4 years and still feel relatively the same as before. With Trump, there's such a draw and a sell to his persona that forces the American people to take part in democracy and play an active role in their local, state, and federal government. The one thing that he can do is get people to take action and take notice, whether it's for him or against him. He can get people to get excited, man. He can get people to get excited. That's his caveat. That's his one ticket that he has. But you know why he shouldn't be president? He has over 3,000 lawsuits against him. His sister has spoken ill about his character. His wife has spoken ill about his character. Republican officials have spoken ill about his character. He has failed to respond to COVID appropriately. Nearly 200,000 Americans are going to die and have died due to no plan of action for COVID. Unemployment rates have hit historic numbers. He takes credit for the economy that was recovered and is doing well and broke even and surpassed leveling off years ago, 3 years prior to his presidency. He fails to recognize damaging business practices that can hinder the safety of the environment. He fails to recognize that his rhetoric, as you know, there it's suggestive green lights for people to act in violence against black people, people of color. He refers to black athletes as prima donnas and unworthy of the success that they have. He adheres to practices that have been taken up by detention centers. He has made personal financial ties to international leaders throughout his presidency. He has made several direct and implied sexual advancements about his daughter and just women in general. He has no true beliefs. He stands for what makes sense at the time that he says it. He does not care about people. He cares about which puppets can he toy with most often. He makes sexist remarks about the rights of women and their bodies. He makes xenophobic comments about Muslims and refers to COVID as the Chinese virus. He often double lies about his stance on other people and countries. He has pardoned political figures who were tried and convicted of committing fraud, tax evasion, and other felonious acts. He is not the visionary businessman that his PR team has done a good job of making people believe him to be. He has 6 failed businesses. He went bankrupt more than 5 times. He skips out on paying people for like objective work based on his own judgment of how the work was done. He fuels the fire for white supremacy to gain traction in the streets. He backs the use of excessive militaristic style force on people exercising their First Amendment rights. The people out here protesting, the people out here in the streets doing good work. He refers to groups who conspire to behave and lead with bigotry as benefactors, as good people to society. He juggles between disrespectful commentary and unintelligible explanation points. He does not have the best interests of every American. He does not have the best interest of every American. He just doesn't. What he does is he understands his selling point. He knows not even just his target audience. He knows how to curate a target audience and then double down on what it is that he's trying to sell them, because they're going to buy that shit up anyway. They're going to eat that shit up. What Trump knows how to do is get people to fall in line. He makes it impossible for people around him to not be undeniably pro-Trump. He makes it nearly impossible. Because if you're going to remain in his little circle of influence, you have to be his dude all the time. Like, you have to be a yes man, yes woman for him. There is no escape. There is no challenging him. He may talk about the idea of being challenged, but it has to be on his terms. It has to be conditional. I want you to know that. Let's say, okay. Whether he gets elected or not, at some point he's going to have to leave. Okay. Wait for the tell-all book post-presidency if he does not get elected. Or even if he gets elected for another term, wait for that book to come out, 2024. If he doesn't get elected this year, then he'll have a book out talking about all of the things that happened, all the things that people try to undermine him about, call him out for, make him out to be this terrible person. Wait for the tell-all book. And about a decade from now, when he certainly can no longer be president, you're going to see on whatever streaming service or whatever form of entertainment that we get our shows and documentaries on, whether that's Netflix, Hulu, or some new thing in the future, check out the way in which they're going to present and talk about him. Notice the people who were around him when it was convenient and then the people who no longer need to serve him. Watch how their opinion changes. Watch the way in which they speak about him. When all is said and done, when the dust clears up, and there's no pressure to be in his little circle, watch how they switch up. I guarantee it. You stay tuned. Stay tuned. And with that comes the end of this episode. My name is Antonio Laporte, and I appreciate you wanting to tune in. And let me say this. Thank you again for your support, and thank you for still sticking around to listen to what I got to say. It means a lot. I'll be back in a few days, a few weeks, who knows? Because you came here to listen, and I came here to speak. All right, see y'all.